This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovek on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, for a show famously about nothing, Seinfeld created a whole lot of something for its star.
Oh my God, the enduring sitcom has helped propel comedian Jerry Seinfeld's net worth to... drumroll, that's my lame drumroll, more than $1 billion, according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index, which is valuing his wealth for the first time. So, on the list.
Annie Massa is wealth reporter for Bloomberg News. She's the lead writer on what is one of the most read stories on the Bloomberg terminal. It's pretty, can I say?
This is like the third or fourth time we're talking about it, Annie.
What? Before you introduce the guest.
Yes.
She's not a guest, she's family, but
she's
go ahead.
Family. Hold on to your wallets, because she is one mean championship poker player. Did you know that about Annie? That's true, right? I'm not making that up.
I mean, I do like to play poker. Championship, I don't know about that.
You turned us on to that poker game, didn't you? Like way back when?
Probably.
You did.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure you did. All right, to be continued. We're going to like just place that on the table for a moment. So Jerry Seinfeld, first of all, how did you guys finally say, all right, we got to look at Jerry? Like what happened?
Well, I think he's kind of been... I mean, he's surely been on the radar of the wealth team for a long time. Very enduring comic. Everybody knows Seinfeld, and I think everybody kind of knows that he, you know, has a lot of real estate, has a lot of vintage cars. So we took a look back in the file, and valuing him, we were able to come up with the figure that he is in the ranks of the world's billionaires.
Okay, talk methodology here, because some of the things that you just mentioned, you didn't even include in the analysis.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, for the big chunks of his wealth, it really comes from, no surprise to anyone, syndication of Seinfeld. So that's where you get the major portion of his net worth. But there are also things in this file that kind of reflect how American media has changed over time, and Seinfeld's been one of those shows that has made the jump from, okay, it was sitcom royalty of the 90s, but it also is a huge streaming hit. So Netflix paid over $500 million for the global streaming rights to Seinfeld, and Seinfeld got almost $100 million out of that deal by our estimates. So valuing these things together and then tracking them against an index of a pretty conservative returns, we valued him as a billionaire.
Can I tell you, that's kind of my favorite. It's so Bloomberg, which is what like just speaks to my heart because I love Bloomberg. But it's like, the analysis assumes Seinfeld, 69, invested his earnings beginning in 1990. The cash is appreciated in line with the historic performance of the MSCI World Index. Like, is that what you guys did?
Yeah, we have to have all the disclaimers involved so people know. I mean, at the end of the day, it is an analysis. We don't, you know, have
it's
the exact
It's art and science.
It's not like he
it's
said.
Art, it's both art and science.
Yeah. He didn't say, hey, Annie, come on over. Here's the bank statement.
Yeah,
and though,
Jerry,
the
if you're
accounts.
Out there, yeah, well, I'd love to see your bank statements.
Well, to be fair, you did reach out to representatives for Jerry Seinfeld.
Yes.
What did they tell you?
They said that they consider it inaccurate without elaborating further.
Because it could be $2 billion?
Right. I mean, these
could be
are
more,
our
could be
estimates.
Less.
That's right.
Or less.
But the cars.
And yeah, so he is a huge vintage car collector, and anyone who has followed Seinfeld's career knows that he also parlayed that into another show after Seinfeld ended, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. So you'll see some of that love of vintage cars
show up.
That's
a fun show.
Yeah.
It is a fun show.
Yeah,
but, exactly. But you didn't include that in the wealth estimate.
We did not include the vintage cars. At the end of the day, they were a little bit too hard to value. It was too hard to value that.
Yeah.
So we left that separate from the analysis.
So cool. So where does it put him in, like, the stack of our who's he number?
You know, it's
sorry, I forgot to look.
He is a billionaire, but there are many billionaires who are much richer than
so
Jerry
like Jeff
Seinfeld.
Bezos doesn't have to worry about anything. Well, Elon Musk doesn't have to. Bernard or no.
But I do think it follows this pattern that I think is interesting, which is, you know, there are different types of billionaires out there, and this is something that you and the team write a lot about. Earlier this year, Taylor Swift, or not this year, it was late last year. The Wealth team calculated Taylor Swift's billions and did a great analysis about that. But it's not typical that you'd see entertainers at this level of wealth.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That is kind of an interesting thing. Some of the people who are most ubiquitous in pop culture, when you look at their wealth compared to some names that the average person has never heard of. I mean, I'm not talking about Jeff Bezos, but I mean hedge fund managers that aren't on everybody's radar.
Right.
The average entertainer doesn't have anywhere near that level of wealth. So it is comparatively rarer, or rarer than you might think, to see entertainers make it into that echelon. And Jerry Seinfeld's a good example.
Right. And I think about, was it, I feel like a few years ago, did we talk about Oprah, like kind of with her holdings and her dynasty and her shows, like being a billionaire, making a lot of money. It is kind of fascinating because we were talking about younger generation, whether it's Friends or Seinfeld. I have a 21-year-old who has gone through the, you know, Friends and so on and so forth. But a show like Seinfeld, I mean, I'll still watch other younger generations. And so you think about the fees that are generated off them, it just continues.
Yeah, and it's just a model that was so unique to that time. Like they, Friends and Seinfeld, I mean, those syndication deals, like you're sitting pretty forever, basically.
I think there are some other deals now for streaming, not necessarily syndication. The Office comes to mind as one of those mainstay shows that, like, you just can't get enough of, and I think that's going to endure for generations. Maybe I'm, I don't know, dating myself a little bit, but 30 Rock is pretty great. Those old NBC shows. But that was an era that doesn't exist anymore.
Well, like, I love Lucy. Like, think about it. No offense, but I Love Lucy was, like, stayed around. I don't even know if you can still see it somewhere. Probably, but was syndicated.
Yeah, and now it feels
constantly totally
different, where I just log into Netflix and I'm flooded with a zillion different things. And I just, it takes me 45 minutes to figure out what to even watch.
That's a good way to end it with Annie. We only have, like, 10 seconds left, Annie. But the fact that he got 25% of that Netflix streaming deal shows that his deal with the syndication was really good.
He was able to negotiate throughout very good terms, it appears.
I bet Larry David did pretty well, too.
Larry's okay.
I'm just
LD.
Pretty good.
Yes!
Ba-dum-bum.
There she is.
This is why we love her. Just one of the many reasons. Annie Massa is wealth reporter for Bloomberg News. That story, her story, it is among the most read on the Bloomberg. You are listening and watching Bloomberg Business Week. This is Bloomberg Radio. Yada, yada, yada.
When cybercriminals strike, the difference between a catastrophic event and resilience is preparedness. Finance leaders who plan ahead can thwart the damage posed by ransomware. Yet in a recent EY poll, only 23% of directors expressed confidence in their organization's ability to respond to a ransomware attack. Cyber preparedness is just one facet of the complex risk landscape finance leaders face every day. Now more than ever, it's vital to keep ahead of developments. Cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, listen, folks. TikTok. We have spent a lot of time in recent weeks actually talking about the fate of TikTok. U.S. House of Representatives passing a bill with an ultimatum for TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, sell the app or be banned in the United States. But we're not quite there yet.
No, we're not. But if we were to get there, what would it mean for the 170 million Americans who use the app? Or, like, especially, Carol, the creators who built their careers creating content, selling things on the app. They use it for their livelihood.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, back with us to talk about is Emily Ward and Jess Hunnigan, co-founders of Shine Talent Group. They have a group of talent managers who work with influencers to match them with brands. Emily is out there in Toronto, Jess from LA. Great to have you both back with us. Emily, let me kick it off with you. What are you hearing from the community of influencers when it comes to TikTok specifically?
Yeah, well, I think there's been a lot of chatter about it, and there's definitely some concerns. For the talent who we represent, who have made this into a full profession, it's pretty rare for them just to have one platform that they are, you know, disseminating content onto. So what we are seeming to hear from talent right now is they're just making sure that their other platforms are also strong, because nobody quite knows what's going to happen over the next couple months.
So Jess, come on in here and give us an idea. We did hear from Emily that the folks who you guys work with tend to have different platforms. You know, of course, Instagram with its reels. We can see that with YouTube and stuff as well. What do people do? Like, what do your clients do on the platform that actually brings them revenue? Because my understanding is TikTok's creator program is not particularly lucrative when you compare it to other creative programs. Where the real money is with this with working with brands and signing partnerships.
Yeah, exactly. So what they've done is create these communities. And when brands are looking at ways to reach their target audience, they're trying to figure out a way to do that, right? And the most direct way they can go often is through influencers who are speaking directly to their target market. So where this is something, you know, if this does come into play, it will majorly affect the lives of the people who have built careers on TikTok. It's going to also be very, very detrimental to brands who are using TikTok as a platform to reach their audiences.
Well, and I am curious, let me just follow up with you, Jess, first, is that it was interesting what you said about kind of making sure that their other platforms are ready to go. How many, though, you know, as a result might do that and say, well, wait a minute, this could ultimately be a better platform for me? Because I understand how powerful TikTok is, and 170 million Americans who use it, that's a powerful audience. But I just do wonder how many might find all of a sudden, wait, this is better for me.
I don't know that they'd say it's better, perhaps comparable. Like, they might be able to really merge their audience over to Instagram or YouTube and find the same results. That's definitely possible. But I think, you know, what we've seen over the last number of years, especially, is TikTok is a hugely powerful tool. And there's an opportunity to go viral with content that you don't tend to see on other platforms. So I think they'll miss that for sure.
Hey, Emily, come on back in here. Is this something that you're actually considering could happen?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And
like, this is something you're planning for.
It's something that we are prepared for. We are absolutely prepared for. And we've been providing strategy, like, to our talent and to our brands if questions come up. I was going to share how, like, in the industry, what people are seemingly comparing it to is Vine, when, you know, Vine went down.
Right.
And there was people who took the standpoint that, no, this is, you know, too active, you know, to fail. And there's other people who said, well, okay, I'm going to try to, you know, build my other audiences and make sure that I have, like, a backup plan. And I think that's kind of the approach that we're taking with our talent and our brands. We don't know what's going to happen. But one thing that we can say when it comes to social talent, social creators, is that they generally, genuinely don't own the platforms that they are disseminating their content onto. So they need to have a diverse, you know, business model that way. So they have multiple areas where they can be disseminating content.
Well,
we also recommend that they have something that they do own, like their own website, their own newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
So they have some security, like, within that. And it's a differentiation between, you know, again, yeah, creators who are just kind of playing in the space, and then the other people who have made full careers out of this. They have to take it seriously, and they need to have backup plans.
Well, you know, and the reason I bring up, like, you know, and you talked about, you know, making sure that they're up to snuff, if you will, on other platforms. In India, 1.4 billion people, it took TikTok just a few years to build an audience of 200 million users. But when India pulled the plug on TikTok. I mean, India was its biggest market. They pulled the plug on June 29th, 2020. The Indian government banned it along with 58 other Chinese apps. And what happened is people ended up quickly going to Instagram and YouTube, and they built some really big audiences. So I do think, you know, Emily, right? It's amazing how the market kind of gets frustrated, but then we adapt. And I just do wonder if that ultimately does everybody, all of those influencers, are they just as adaptable and can find, you know, as big an audience on Instagram and YouTube if they don't already have them there?
Or in a new one that might like emerge as well. And I think like that's another like a point to bring up. Creators who are successful, like they can move from one platform to the next. And although right now we're talking about TikTok and YouTube and Instagram, we're not sure what could be the next one coming down the pipeline in the future. It makes me think about Clubhouse and like this spike that we saw in Clubhouse, like over
COVID.
But it was, and I mean, watching the pace of that, and we loved it as well. Like as business owners, we thought it was fantastic. And I would have thought that that would have been a platform that could have kind of crossed over, and we would have started to see some more brand deals happening in our space. So my point is that there's always going to be platforms that pop up. There's going to be some that last and have an incredible, you know, run, and there's other ones that are going to be there for like a season or two. The creators who are strong are going to be able to move their audiences through those platforms. And they're also going to be smart enough to have something that they own themselves.
Hey, Jess, let's just, I want to end with just the idea of contextualizing this for our listeners, for our viewers. How much are people making in these positions? Like the people you work with typically, how much are they making doing this stuff?
I mean, there's a huge range. And I would say in the US alone, I would guesstimate that there's, you know, in the high thousands to tens of thousands of people who utilize TikTok as their main source of income, and then tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands who use it to supplement their income. So, you know, we see people on TikTok who are within our agency who are making upwards of $1 million a year here. It's not chump change. Like we're talking about some pretty big dollars.
Right.
That's same
thing.
Money.
Yeah. And so same thing if you go to some of the other platforms, you know, Instagram, certainly YouTube. Hey guys, thank you so much. Emily Ward, Jess Hunnigan, co-founders of Shine Talent Group, joining us there. Emily out there in Toronto, and of course, Jess from Los Angeles.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.